is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Friday, November 19th, 2021. I'm your host, Alexis Kenyon. Rosanna Longo-Better is operating the board. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, do you feel overwhelmed or feelings of doom when you read articles about climate change? Well, other than realistic, there's a new term for that. On this week's H2O Radio, Jamie Sudler will talk with people about eco-anxiety. After that is a media garden segment about social media and privacy. Then we'll hear about an affordable housing program that's using grants from the Department of Agriculture. Finally, we have our regular segment from .org spotlighting the work of a local nonprofit every Friday. At 8:30, Connections comes your way. Host Roger Wendell talks with Henny Lasley about her work crafting rules around new marijuana legislation. Then at 9:30, Meredith Carson will be in the studio for the Morning Sound Alternative to bring you an eclectic mix of music until noon. That's all ahead, but first, these are the news headlines with KGNU's Stacey Johnson.
A proposed measure to reduce the state's income tax rate has gained enough signatures to be a part of the November 2022 ballot. The Colorado Secretary of State announced the qualification yesterday. Colorado Newsline reports conservatives John Caldera and Jerry Sonnenberg are backing the measure known as Initiative 31, which aims to lower the income tax rate. According to Colorado Newsline, Caldera and Sonnenberg back the income tax reduction that Colorado voters approved last year. That reduction brought the tax rate down from 4.63%. This most recent measure would lower it further from 4.55% to 4.4%. Supporters needed close to 125,000 signatures to put the measure on the ballot and were able to submit roughly 148,000 valid signatures among the 215,000 collected. A fiscal impact statement released in July by nonpartisan state staff estimates the measure will save the individual taxpayer about $95. As Colorado's coronavirus hospitalizations move up past 1,500 patients, health officials hope monoclonal antibody treatment will avoid a crisis. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
The issue with using the monoclonal treatment is that it is only effective before the patient needs to be admitted to the hospital, which means that the patient must react quickly in order to secure a treatment slot. When given the antibody treatment, UC Health said it is 70 to 80% effective at preventing hospitalization. The Colorado Sun reports that what it comes down to is prevention, meaning using an immunization shot to prevent you from getting the virus, versus treatment, when you use the monoclonal antibody after you've contracted the virus. A CNBC September poll showed that when it comes to the vaccines, some people are skeptical of the scientific and government regulatory processes that created them. But 83% said they were in favor of using the monoclonal treatment. Vaccines stimulate the body's immune system to produce antibodies that will attack the coronavirus's spike protein when called upon. Monoclonal antibodies are essentially synthetic versions of the antibodies people would already have if they had been vaccinated. Currently, 82% of those in hospitals infected with the virus are unimmunized. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
The UC Health System announced yesterday that a Department of Defense medical team will arrive next week at the Poudre Valley Hospital in Fort Collins to ease capacity and staffing challenges worsened as COVID-19 hospitalizations continue to rise across the state. The Defense Department will deploy roughly 20 reinforcements at the hospital for about a month. The team will include nurses, respiratory therapists, administrators, and other providers. The team results from a state request to the Federal Emergency Management Agency, which already has assigned federal reinforcements to Pueblo's Parkview Health System. The White House announced yesterday Boulder Democrat and former Speaker of the Colorado House, K.C. Becker, will serve as the Region 8 Administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency, a position based in Denver. Along with Colorado, Region 8 covers five other states in the Mountain West, as well as 28 tribal nations. During her tenure at the state legislature, Becker was a prime sponsor of the controversial Senate Bill 181, a 2019 measure that rewrote Colorado's oil and gas regulations. According to the Colorado Sun, Becker and other supporters touted the legislation as protecting the environment and public safety by putting badly needed safeguards in place, giving more regulatory controls to local governments. The Colorado Sun reports that prior to Becker entering politics, she worked for the Interior Department, where she practiced administrative and natural resources law. The Boulder Open Space and Mountain Parks Department is set to open the new 3-mile Unimani Loop Trail today. The trail is located west of downtown Boulder. Because construction work is still occurring along the trail, city officials will open the trail each day after 5 p.m. Monday through Friday and all day on Saturday and Sunday. Trail closure will begin at 5 a.m. Monday through Friday. The Open Space and Mountain Parks Department anticipates completing construction of the trail in early 2022, weather permitting. Forest Service officials announced yesterday afternoon that Kruger Rock Fire remains at 146 acres with containment at 60%. Yesterday's fire activity was minimal, with no aircraft being used to support suppression efforts. The Denver Gazette reports more than 200 firefighters worked to contain the blaze as of yesterday morning. Today's weather along the upper metro front range includes mostly cloudy skies with highs in the low 60s. Winds could gust as high as 17 to 20 miles per hour. Tonight's skies will be mostly cloudy with temperatures in the low 30s. The current temperature outside the Boulder studios is 40 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Eco-anxiety is a term that's entered the lexicon to describe persistent worries about the future of life on Earth. As the UN's COP26 meetings ended in Glasgow, university students and teachers in Denver shared their feelings on the climate crisis and what they're doing to endure. H2O Radio's Jamie Sudler has more from Denver.
In early November, the American Psychological Association released a report concluding, among other things, that concern about climate change and worry about the future can lead to many emotions: fear, anger, powerlessness, stress, sadness, which are all now referred to as eco-anxiety. We all experience various emotions that wax and wane when we're facing the existential threat of global warming, and it especially affects younger people who will bear the brunt of its impacts. I'm sitting outside a campus cafe with Jacqueline Miller, an undergraduate at Metropolitan State University of Denver. As she thinks about climate change,
it's definitely unsettling.
Her body shifts in her chair, and she says she wanted to slow down her breathing.
I felt some unsettling feelings in my stomach, you know what I mean? I wouldn't call it necessarily anxiety at this point, but it definitely is the feelings that lead to anxiety.
Jacqueline is studying water and integrative health care, and she wants to start an aromatherapy business. Even with some discomfort, she seems eager to share her reactions to the climate getting warmer. She says her emotions can go from panic on one hand to feeling everything's going to be fine on the other. She thinks a lot of people are terrified that humans could be gone, or many not left. Dealing with her own anxiety, Jacqueline gets a sense of calm by working in her garden.
I have a garden. I have flowers this year. Last year I did vegetables and stuff. So this year I decided to just do a bunch of flowers that bring pollinators, so bee flowers and bird flowers.
Turning to nature seems to be a common way to deal with what's being called eco-anxiety. Having a range of feelings in reaction to global warming is something Dr. Adriana Nieto understands. She's the chair of the Chicano Studies Department at Metro State and says her personal reactions to climate change can go from being sad to hopeless and depressed. She said that it's important to acknowledge when we're feeling anxiety and bring more consciousness to it.
We have to act. And I don't know that I act in huge ways, but I try to act in ways within my own sphere in my classroom.
And she too finds some comfort in digging in the dirt.
I have a tiny little courtyard in the front and the back of my house, and we've just put plants anywhere we could to green it up. But the act of touching plants and dirt and water, I think, is grounding.
Grounding is what DeMarley Lang finds in the Rocky Mountains outside of Denver when he feels depressed about climate and other worries.
I'll go up to the mountains, to be honest, and just enjoy some time. Relax. I love the mountains.
DeMarley is a student from Jamaica who plans to work as a lawyer, helping people in his country get access to water, which he says is difficult because of poor infrastructure.
I feel angry at times, perplexed, numb, and it's just because I know that I can't do anything, you know what I mean?
Other ways to cope with climate stress: taking beautiful pictures of spiders and insects. That helps Efrain Leal Escalera, an undocumented student at the university. He arrived in the U.S. when he was 6. He has already overcome many challenges in life, which makes him feel empowered when he talks to me about his emotional reactions. He exudes excitement. He wants to talk, but the subject of climate change, he says, makes him feel more
frustrated more than anything, and how a lot of people are not really taking it that seriously or not putting it into perspective in how we live our lives.
When he's feeling hopeless and frustrated about the climate, he tries not to get caught up in his emotions and instead
embrace them and feel them and process them and think about them and be aware of them and not just let them consume me. That's probably one of the things that I've gotten better at, and just being aware.
Leal Escalera engages with his community, being a voice for them and making them feel seen. He also takes beautiful pictures of insects and small creatures, visible from both an artistic and scientific viewpoint.
Using my photography, inspiring people and bringing awe and wonder and curiosity to those that come from similar backgrounds to mine, and, you know, letting them know, like, hey, we can make a difference, even though you don't think it's a big one. It really is, because I lived it and I have experienced it.
In dealing with the enormity of the climate crisis and the feelings it generates, relief can be found in what one might consider small things. And not surprisingly, among the recommendations from the American Psychological Association, spend more time in nature, plant pollinator-friendly plants, be mindful of your feelings, and find connection with others, whether it's in a spiritual or political group, or just with friends and neighbors. For H2O Radio in Denver, I'm Jamie Sudler.
This is KGNU Media Gardens, Nuestras Ondas, La Encrucijada, where Boulder County youth tell their stories, give their perspectives, and become a seed to amplify youth voices from our community. Today's segment is brought to you in partnership with New Vista High School.
This is Avi McGrady from New Vista High School. What is the purpose of social media? Communication, entertainment, or giving your information to internal services. The constant pull of our phones is due to the fact that companies can tailor exactly what they want you to see and exactly what they don't want you to see. With the updates and upgrades of personal technology, we forfeit something that we value quite a bit in this day and age, and most of us don't even realize it, our privacy. Every time we scroll through our feed on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, or any other social media, your phone keeps track of everything. How long you view an image or video, how many times the video repeats, if we like it, comment on it, or share it. These small actions may seem like they don't make a difference, but in fact, they're exactly the tool that shapes the things the platform wants you to see. As you may think, hey, that doesn't sound so bad, but what if I told you that it's also the tool that shapes your perspective on things? Now that you know that, you won't get tricked this time, right? The unfortunate truth is that you have already been tricked. Your perspective has probably already changed if you've been on social media, compared if you have never touched a phone. These services give you what they want you to see, not what you want to see. A research article published in 2020 by Science Direct reads, "Is evolved from a mechanism which benefited society to an instrument of control, not only to control the accumulation of capital, but more importantly, user behavior." Another snippet of this study entails, once the data has been harvested, aggregated, and shared, it is almost impossible to reverse, and thus persists as part of a data assemblage that is forever associated with the individual. This problem has only been dangerous ever since the rise of social media, and we've implemented this media so much into our day-to-day life that now we can't get away from it. This process of taking user information and hiding it away forever is called data mining. The purpose of data mining is to find more accurate advertisement opportunities for users of social media sites, so it knows exactly what to flash in your face to make you impulsively buy it. Then, they can use the data based on how long you looked at the advertisement or post to give you more accurate posts that will appeal to you. It's scarily good at getting enticing products into your face. There's really no way around it. Even if you know what's going on behind the scenes, it won't change the fact that you're probably already trapped in this algorithm.
A diversity of youth voices and perspectives is crucial for a rich, informative, and creative media landscape that enables the growth of civic participation and community strengthening. The KGNU Media Gardens Youth Initiative will continue to amplify more young voices and perspectives through these airwaves.
An organization in Moab, Utah helps find affordable and efficient housing with grants from the USDA's Mutual Self-Help Program. Along the way, they help educate builders and provide more space for future homeowners. Justin Higginbottom reports. This story is part of a collaboration between the Solutions Journalism Network and Rocky Mountain Community Radio, highlighting affordable housing solutions across the Mountain West.
I'm standing on the Community Rebuilds campus. Today they're hosting events for the Natural Building Conference. It's a gathering of those interested in construction using materials like straw bale, soil, and lime mortar, which is being mixed now.
Just take a little bit on your hawk and your trowel.
Moab has a housing problem, like other tourist-oriented towns in the region. Amanda Jane Albert is an instructor here.
Housing currently is just unreachable by a lot of folks. There's lots of service workers here. There's lots of seasonal people that come in and leave. But the tourist industry and the second home situation has sort of raised the cost of living beyond reach for most of the workers in Moab.
Housing that is affordable can be trailers or manufactured homes not suited for Moab's hot summers and cold winters. Her organization solves both problems, providing affordable housing built with material like straw bale that's inexpensive and energy efficient. Their intern program also cuts down on labor costs while training the next generation of natural home builders.
One of the benefits of the program here is that we provide a safe, accessible space for anybody who's interested in construction to come and be on a construction site, where it might be intimidating if you're not a typical construction worker to walk up to just some construction site and say, hey, I want to learn.
Joa Contenantino is an intern from Tallahassee, Florida. He was interested in natural building, but it can be expensive to learn.
Something really special about this program is that they do accept people with little to absolutely no experience, and that's kind of unheard of, to get kind of a foot into the natural building world without going to school.
Since 2010, Community Rebuilds has built 52 homes. According to the group, those homes cost around $70 per square foot, which is about half the normal cost. Homeowners also take advantage of federally subsidized loans. I'm inside one of their houses with owner Marie Brophy. She lived in Moab for around 5 years, car camping her first season, and then renting rooms.
And at that point, it had never actually occurred to me that I could be a part of the program or that I would ever be a homeowner. It still seemed kind of like a crazy idea to me, but I decided to apply.
She's lived in the home since 2018. There's plenty of natural light. The tan walls look like they could be carved from desert rock.
It's so well designed with the passive solar and the straw bale insulation that I rarely actually run my heat or AC.
The program requires homeowners to volunteer around 20 hours a week in building, but Brophy couldn't keep herself away.
There were some nights I was tiling windowsills until 11 p.m. by little lamp light or whatever. It just feels like my home because I got to be such an active part of building it.
Alex Burbage is a construction supervisor. He points out a picture frame in Brophy's house that provides a window into the straw bale insulation. It's called a truth window.
It's a tradition, I think, in the natural building world, especially with straw bale houses, to put a truth window to show people, yeah, your house is it's made of straw.
Affordable housing is one thing, but keeping those homes affordable and finding space for more can also be an issue. Ricky Epperson is the executive director of Community Rebuilds.
You can build an affordable house and you can sell it to a low-income family. But once they sell it, it's forever in the current market, which is completely unreasonable.
Around 5 years ago, a program member sold their home after it appreciated by around $100,000 in only 2 years. She says a lesson her organization learned was to work with others to keep housing and land affordable and open for permanent residents. For example, deed restrictions can prevent homes from ending up as vacation rentals, and land trusts can require development for year-round residents. She helped push the planned Arroyo Crossing development, which will provide 300 units dedicated to housing for local families and workers.
Getting everyone together and figuring out how everybody can give a little or nudge a little or like relax a little or get serious a little, it takes a village.
A village that Epperson is helping to build. Justin Higginbottom for Rocky Mountain Community Radio.
Finally, we hear from .org, spotlighting the work of a local nonprofit every Friday. Stacy Johnson visited the Love and Arms Animal Sanctuary, which is challenging Thanksgiving meal eaters to enjoy their dinner without taking a turkey's life.
Welcome to .org, KGNU's look at local nonprofits.
This is Robin, a beautiful, boisterous turkey, graced with a wattle that looks very much like a string of pink, bubbling jewels. Robin is one of the many residents living and thriving at the Loving Arms Animal Sanctuary located in Erie, Colorado. Chartrina White, Executive Director, and Julie Arnold, Engagement Coordinator, share more about Loving Arms and how the sanctuary's rescued ambassadors of donkeys, chickens, ducks, goats, sheep, pigs, cows, horses, a rooster, and other turkeys are often the compassion connection between humans, non-humans, the planet, and more.
Can you tell us a little bit about Loving Arms?
Yeah, so Loving Arms is a farmed animal sanctuary, and we're a nonprofit, and our mission is to create ahimsa, nonviolence to all beings in the world. And to do that for farmed animals and to include farmed animals in your circle of compassion. And we tried to do that through educational programming by inspiring and educating and helping people know that they are empowered to make a choices in their lives to create, again, a more compassionate world.
What is your take on what Loving Arms is about?
Well, I've actually always, from the beginning, I've always loved that everyone in the community is part of the cause. It's not just the founders or the board or what have you. It's everyone. Everyone who comes here has a role in not only helping us with these residents, but also getting the word out into the world about how one little change for a person can make a huge difference for all the farmed animals all over the world. So it's that that actually has been there since the beginning, and I always admired that. And also just how these animals, these residents are, I love how they're ambassadors for their own species, which is a big task, it's a huge ask for us of them, but it's so important that we tell their stories and they represent their species for all the animals in the world that don't have the voice that we are giving them.
For more information on volunteer opportunities, donation needs, events, and ways to celebrate Thanksgiving instead of traditional Thanksgiving in honor of Robin the Turkey, go to lovingarms.org. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
For their link and another listen, go to our blog at kgnu.org/dotorg.
Today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Alexis Kenyon. Rosanna Longo-Better has been running the board. Thanks to Stacy Johnson, Steve Miller, Jamie Sudler, the Media Gardens crew, Justin Higginbottom, and Shannon Young for their contributions to today's program. Stay tuned for Connections with Roger Wendell just after this news update from the BBC.